This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. We're back after a week hiatus to catch up on state politics. Here for the discussion are Rob Schofield of the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation. Good to see you both.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Governor Roy Cooper issued another veto this week. It's his 13th since taking office in January. The Democrat has seen 9 of those vetoes get overridden by the Republican-led legislature. 4 of them are pending. One of those pending, the most recent veto, was of Senate Bill 656. This measure would make it easier for third-party and unaffiliated candidates to get on the ballot, but Cooper didn't object to that. This legislation also includes a provision that would eliminate the primary election for judicial races in spring of 2018. Cooper says it's a precursor to the GOP appointing judges instead of having the public elect them. Becky, what do you say?
Well, he may be right. I mean, this is what we're hearing. We haven't seen that yet from the General Assembly, but what we're hearing is that some sort of change in the way that we elect or get judges, whether that's through a retention, whether through it's an appointment. We haven't seen any language on that yet. Interestingly enough, when Governor Cooper was in the General Assembly, he was in favor of something other than the general election of judges like we have now. So it's interesting that he's changed his position on this, at least according to the veto message he sent over to the General Assembly.
Rob.
There has been a sustained effort, really, ever since Governor Cooper was elected, even before he took office, of Republicans seeking to raise, and by that R-A-Z-E, our court system, and remake it, because they are concerned that they are that their agenda is jeopardized by a judiciary that is not dominated by Republicans. So there was a proposal at one point to pack the Supreme Court with additional justices, shrink the Court of Appeals. We've done that. We've made every race partisan. And now we're moving in a direction where they actually want to appoint the judges themselves. Literally, the General Assembly is conceiving of a scheme whereby they would appoint the judges themselves. Now, the idea of merit selection is a big category. Governor Cooper, right, he supported it in the past, and it's quite conceivable that good government groups and the powers that be could agree on something like that. But gosh, that's something that needs to be done thoughtfully over an extended period of time, likely in a regular session of the legislature before then going on to the voters. The notion that we're just sort of putting these things together in conference committee reports by the dark of night, in special sessions. We can't keep track of how many of these special sessions we've had. I think Governor Cooper's right in raising some red flags.
And some political maneuvering here, right? Because this was a bill about third party and ballot access for groups other than Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
And then what gets looped in has to do with judicial primaries. The legislature dared Cooper to veto this, and he did.
And he did. Yeah,
and
we saw that coming.
And he's getting hammered for it.
Right, exactly. I mean, to Rob's point, I don't see that the General Assembly is trying to dismantle the judicial system. I think that they're taking a look. Part of what came out of this short session, the House passed. The Senate has not taken it up. But the House has looked at redistricting the judicial districts across all of North Carolina, which has not been done since the 1960s. So this would really, I mean, think how much North Carolina has changed in all those years. And to ensure that every citizen across North Carolina has access to a fair judicial system, I think they should be absolutely commended for doing this. Also, while we're on the subject, let's look at how do we elect our judges? Is it the best way? Does it ensure access to a fair judicial system for all North Carolinians? I think they're on the right path.
Two quick points. One is that it's ironic, and I think it's emblematic of the cynicism in the General Assembly, that this part about making it easier to get on the ballot and how many signatures you have to get, they made sure it didn't apply to the General Assembly. It only applies to other offices. With respect to the judiciary, I don't think there's any doubt that the maps that Justin Burr, Representative Burr, has drawn in the House were horrifically gerrymandered. They're designed to elect Republicans. That's what this is all about. The Republicans are trying to figure out a way to get the judiciary in a position where they can control it better because they're worried about their agenda being endangered when the anti-Trump vote takes over in 2018 and Democrats whittle down their supermajorities.
We will keep an eye on judicial redistricting. The appetite in the Senate, as of now, seems to be pretty limited. Meanwhile, a bill that was signed into law this week means an extension for a grant program to support the state's film industry. This law sets in motion more than $30 million to lure movie and TV productions back to the state. Listeners may remember legislators voted to end a previous tax incentive in 2014. Many productions then left for Georgia, where incentive money continues to flow. And there have been calls to renew and extend funding for quite some time now, several years. Rob, why is this type of program a good use of government funds?
Well, I'm not sure actually that it is. I think Becky and I both share some concerns about the idea of incentives and in particular the film credits. But I will say that if you're going to do the film credits, by God, make up your mind, because we've seen how, in fact, they had an effect. And when the film credits went away, the production companies went away by and large. And so now we're sort of in this yo-yo kind of approach to it, where we have them, we take them away, we have them again. They need to make up their mind. And when they do it, it would be, as I hate to hammer on this again, but it would be nice if we did it in, with some process and with some open debate, instead of doing it in a conference committee report at the last minute that nobody's seen before. So same old story.
Well, I think Rob and I do agree that this is not a good idea overall. And we talk about film credits and we talk about film grants as if they're the same thing. And they're not. It's not just a matter of semantics with this. We used to have the film credits that were embedded in our tax code. And so any film company or industry or production that qualified for it was eligible to get it. And it could go on and on and on. So from a budgeting standpoint, we never knew what the cost was going to be. A slight improvement in this was going to a film grant program where there was a certain amount of money allocated for it. Film productions could apply for it. When the money was gone, it was gone. There's currently $30 million, and that I say, why do we have anything? I mean, why do we have a pot of money that one industry can tap into? Why don't we distribute that evenly across the state of North Carolina and create a fair playing field for all industry?
You're not a fan of tax incentives, that's putting
for anything,
it mildly.
For anything.
Okay.
Right.
Well, then maybe I don't even need to ask this follow-up, but I think of film as it pertains to Wilmington, aviation in the Triad in Greensboro, and like the aviation technonics, whatever
right,
the word
right,
is.
Right.
I mean, some of these smaller niche industries, are there any that you would be in favor of?
No.
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 Okay.
I mean, you know, because what you're doing, Jeff, is you're taking money away from other industries to support these. You're taking money out of my pocket, out of your pocket, and government somehow is designated, okay, well, these are the chosen ones. These are the ones we're going to bet on. That's not the role of government.
But I think what the proponents would say, and again, I have concerns about them, but I think what the proponents would say, especially the people who live in Wilmington, is, look, our industry's gone away, and we know that we had it, and we had these jobs, and it was great for our community when we had them, and, you know, taking them away has made it go away. I understand the economics argument, but there are, government makes a lot of decisions when it comes to making tax breaks for various industries. It's a complicated
singling
area.
Out localities.
It's a very complicated area.
There's also a lot of decisions that local governments can make to encourage businesses to come that don't involve picking winners and losers. Things like lower tax rates, things like removing
good
regulations, good schools, a well-trained workforce. Those are the things that anybody can come in and benefit from. That's the better policy. That's the better good government way to approach these things.
Moving on, the future of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, a controversial plan to carry fracked natural gas through three states, that includes eight counties in North Carolina, remains uncertain. A state environmental agency rejected an environmental proposal from the builders of the plan on Monday. They asked for more information about erosion and sediment. A federal body is expected to issue a decision on the pipeline later this month. Is this good due diligence by the state? Is this something else?
I think absolutely to do something like this, to put this in mind, we have to have due diligence. We have to have a lot of research. By the way, this is the first decision that has said no. I mean, we're the first in the country to say
right.
No to this. I mean, I think that's significant. I think due diligence is one thing. I think that intentional roadblocks to prevent any kind of pipeline is something else, and I think there needs to be a balance there.
It's a $5.5 billion program that's going to be, you know, tearing up miles of land throughout multiple states. Obviously, we need lots of good, solid environmental protection regulation over something like that. It's an example of why it's been such a tragic mistake to defund our Department of Environment here in North Carolina. They found there was just like basic stuff that's pretty startling that Dominion and Duke, the big dogs running this, didn't even submit like basic plans for how they were going to control sediment, how they were going to control erosion, what the effect was going to be on the Neuse River and endangered species. So those are pretty big issues. There's also, I think, a broader question of really whether we ought to be doubling down with these kinds of investments at a time in which we ought to be moving instead towards sustainable energy, towards reducing our investment in fossil fuels and we should be focusing on solar and conservation. I think there's a real question as to whether this is a good idea. There's also the point to be made that this pipeline was supposed to dead end in Lumberton, and now it looks like it may go into South Carolina, mm-hmm. which may no longer hold quite the benefit for North Carolina that we originally were sold that it would.
Well, another factor that has to be in this discussion is, you know, what is the cost, not only of building the pipeline, but what is the cost of the energy that will be produced from this, and what's the impact that that will have on the economy? You know, everybody, Rob continues to talk about sustainability and renewable energy. You know, those right now, those kind of energies are terribly expensive. What does that do to our economy? There's got to be a balance between, of course, environmental concerns, but also removing some of these barriers to having low cost, easy access to energy. If you want to have an economy, if you want to have people working, if you want to have jobs, if you want North Carolina's economy to continue to grow, energy cost is a big part of that factor.
Although actually when you look at the studies and the environmental impact of greenhouse gases and of fossil fuel, the costs are actually higher for fossil fuels than they are for renewable energy.
One final topic. There were several local primary elections this week. That, of course, means low voter turnout. What we saw was in Fayetteville, a Republican incumbent mayor may very well be in serious trouble come November in terms of keeping his post. Raleigh voters approved a $200 million transportation bond in Greensboro. Mayor Nancy Vaughn got overwhelming support. Any takeaways from Tuesday night of this week?
I think progressives were mobilized. I think Trump has mobilized progressives in lots of places, particularly in the larger cities. They are, you know, sweeping the table. The fact that they would pass this transportation bond by three-quarters vote, I mean, it's pretty remarkable fact that progressives are turning out and are mobilized.
Well, I think that also speaks to the traffic in Raleigh and people going, trying to, I tried to get to RTP this morning at 8 o'clock. And if,
why?
If there's an example of why we need, you know, more infrastructure, congestion relief to get people to work and get goods and services across North Carolina, I mean, the transportation thing certainly is something on everyone's mind. But right here in Raleigh, I thought that the mayor's race was quite interesting. Nancy McFarlane, many people, incumbent, thought that she would have an easy time getting through it. Looks like she's going to be in a runoff as mm-hmm. well. And I mean, this is a very serious race. The other thing that struck me is a lot of incumbents won by very large margins. I don't know whether that's because people know them, they're comfortable with a known entity, name recognition. Not quite. I haven't dug that deep into it yet. But those were kind of my two takeaways from the municipal elections this week.
And weird things happen when you have voter turnout of less than 15%.
Right, yeah. Who's got the bigger family?
Before, yeah. Right. Becky Gray is Senior Vice President with the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield writes for NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center. Thank you both.
Thanks, you, Jeff.
Jeff.